Tonight I want to talk about the first four jhanas. Last night I spoke of the abandoning of the five hindrances, which is often what comes before a description of the jhanas and what's called the gradual training or the graduated training. The gradual training explains the full training of someone on the spiritual path from going forth, beginning on the spiritual path, all the way through to full awakening. And the jhanas constitute an important part of that path. And in order to enter the jhanas, it's necessary to abandon the hindrances. Then, quite secluded from sense pleasures, secluded from unwholesome states, one enters and remains in the first jhana, which is accompanied by thinking and more thinking, and filled with rapture and happiness born of seclusion. One drenches deep, saturates, and suffuses one's body with the rapture and happiness born of seclusion, so there is no part of one's entire body not suffused by this rapture and happiness. So as I said last night, the secluded from sense desire, secluded from unwholesome states, is just saying, abandon the hindrances. And then one enters and remains in the first jhana, which is accompanied by, the words in Pali are vitaka and vichara. You see them translated quite a number of different ways. The commentaries want to translate them as initial and sustained attention to the meditation object. Here they're translated as applied and sustained thought. Sometimes you see initial and sustained thought. I've seen thinking and examining. That's more accurate. Thinking and pondering, which is like thinking and examining. Quite accurate. But most likely it's just a way of emphasizing saying thinking. Notice it said one drenches deep, saturates, and suffuses one's body. This is not four different things to do. This is the way that in Pali you say something with emphasis. So really what it's saying here is in the first jhana, the background thinking that was there in access concentration hasn't gone away. It's still there. And then this jhana is filled with piti and sukha, born of seclusion. Piti and sukha arise because you've abandoned the hindrances, because you have gotten to access concentration. It's quite interesting that there are a large number of interpretations of the jhanas. The commentaries describe states which are actually different from what's described in the suttas. Now, if you ask someone who teaches from the commentaries, is this the same as what's in the suttas, they will tell you, yes, it's identical. But anybody who reads the commentaries carefully and reads the suttas carefully sees that they're actually describing different states. Often you hear there are five factors for the first jhana. Initial attention, sustained attention, piti, sukha, and one-pointedness. But if we look here, all we see is thinking, more thinking, piti, and sukha. There's nothing about one-pointedness. In fact, if there's thinking, your mind is not one-pointed, right? It's got other things going on. As time passed after the Buddha's death, the understanding of what constitutes the jhanas begin to change. You can see this in the Abhidhamma, which was composed, let's say, approximately 200 years after his death. And the understanding of the jhanas had changed even more by the time of the commentaries, which are more than 800 years after his death. By the time of the commentaries, the first jhana had become a state of complete absorption, a state where you're unaware of your body, of sounds, or even the passage of time. You're like gone. And you can't have thinking in a state like that. So rather than realize they were describing the wrong states, they just changed the definition of the Pali words. Simple enough, but unfortunately, it's led to the jhanas becoming known in Theravadan Buddhism as these states that are almost impossible for anyone to access. If we go back to the original definition and throw out the one-pointedness in the first jhana and realize that vitaka and vichara just mean thinking, these are states where the piti and sukha arises and sustains and fills you in the sense that you drench deep, saturate, and suffuse your body with it. And yet there's still some background thinking. Now, when you first begin to enter the jhanas, the first jhana may seem like it's only happening, say, in the upper part of your torso and your head and neck. As you get more skilled with it, it is possible to move the piti and sukha throughout your body. You get the piti and sukha going wherever they show up, and then you just move your attention, say, down into your arm. You're not trying to move the piti or sukha, you're just moving your attention. But the piti and sukha will seem to follow, and then you move it into the other arm, and then into the rest of your torso, and when that's stabilized, into one leg, and then the other leg. And then you can have the piti and sukha really throughout the whole body. This is an advanced practice, okay? If you're learning the jhanas, first learn to get in, and then learn to get in and stay in. And after you've got the jhana stable, then you can try moving it throughout your body. Now, as I said, the trick for entering the jhanas is to generate access concentration, which accomplishes the abandoning of the hindrances. Hang out at access concentration for a while, and then switch your attention to a pleasant sensation, and stay focused on the pleasant sensation, and the piti and sukha will arise on their own. When they do, that becomes the object of your attention, and see if you can stabilize the state. That's the first jhana. We have a simile. Suppose a skilled bath attendant or his apprentice were to pour soap flakes into a metal basin, sprinkle them with water, and knead them into a ball so that the ball of soap flakes would be pervaded by moisture, encompassed by moisture, suffused with moisture inside and out, and yet would not trickle. In the same way, one drenches deep, saturates, and suffuses one's body with the rapture and happiness born of seclusion. So there is no part of one's entire body which is not suffused by this rapture and happiness. So we actually get a picture of what life was like at the time of the Buddha. You didn't go to the grocery store and buy a bar of soap. You had your skilled bath attendant or his apprentice get a metal basin and pour in just the right amount of soap flakes, and then just the right amount of water, and then mix the soap flakes in the water until you had a ball of soap. This mixing is obviously not a really calm, quiet experience. And again, the first jhana has a lot of energy in it, and it's not really a calm, quiet experience either. There's a good bit of that energy in the piti. It makes you sit up straight. It makes you vibrate. There might be some heat. And that's what this simile is pointing to. And it's also pointing that the water completely fills the soap flakes. And when you're really skilled at the first jhana, then the piti and sukha completely fill your body. But as I said, that's a more advanced practice. Figure out how to get the piti and sukha going and sustained. That's your first order of business. And after you've gotten good at that, then you can try moving it throughout your body. After you've gotten to where you can sustain the first jhana for, well, if the PT's not too strong, then maybe 5 to 10 minutes. If the PT's really strong, then you wouldn't want to sustain it that long. Maybe even as little as 30 seconds. Then you can move on to the second jhana. Further, with the subsiding of thinking and more thinking, one enters and remains in the second jhana, which is accompanied by internal confidence and unification of mind, and is without thinking and more thinking, and is filled with rapture and happiness born of concentration. One drenches deep, saturates, and suffuses one's body with the rapture and happiness born of concentration, so there is no part of one's entire body which is not suffused by this rapture and happiness. Okay. So, with the subsiding of the vitaka and the vichara, the thinking drops away as you get more concentrated. Makes sense? One enters and remains in the second jhana, which is accompanied by, well, it says here, internal confidence and unification of mind. The Pali could also equally well be translated as inner tranquility and unification of mind. And I think that's the correct translation. So the thinking really gets replaced with this inner tranquility and the unification of mind. With the thinking gone, the mind can really focus in and become a bit absorbed in the piti and sukha. Because it says this jhana is filled with piti and sukha born of concentration. In the first jhana, it says born of seclusion, meaning secluded from the hindrances. And now it's born of concentration, meaning that the first jhana gave you enough concentration so that you could enter the second jhana. As a practical matter, what you want to do to move from the first jhana to the second jhana is a foreground-background shift. The piti predominates in the first jhana, and the sukha is more in the background. So the physical energy and the happiness is in the background. To move to the second jhana, take a really deep breath, and then let all of the energy out. Really exhale and let everything out. When you do, the piti decreases in intensity. The sukha decreases as well, but hopefully the piti decreases more so that now the sukha, the joy, the happiness, is the predominant thing in your mind. And you focus on that. And then it gets stronger and you stay with it. The piti remains in the background. Instead of being vibratory or a lot of heat or something, maybe it's just some minor rocking or swaying or maybe some circling. It's not a completely settled state, but it's not an agitated state like that mixing of the soap flakes was. The focus in the second jhana is on the experience of happiness, of joy. The focus in the first jhana is on the piti sukha experience. When the first jhana arises the first few times, you might not be able to tell the difference between the piti and the sukha. But when you take that deep breath and calm things down, you notice, okay, the physical energy's gotten quieter and this is the emotional sense of joy, of happiness, and you focus on that. The happiness may not be really steady. It may seem to get a little stronger and then a little weaker and then stronger again. That's okay. That's fine. It just needs to stick around. Now, you don't want to make the happiness really strong. If you start making the happiness too strong, the piti comes back up and you pop back up into the first jhana. What you want is moderate happiness or joy and strong focus on it. if I had a piece of paper and I put a marble or a ball bearing on the piece of paper and I held it, I'd have to really sort of work to keep it from rolling off, right? But if I were then to sort of poke the piece of paper so it had a valley in it and put the marble or ball bearing on it, it'd just stay there, right? I wouldn't have to really pay too much attention. This is what you want to do in the second jhana. When you focus on the happiness, totally give yourself to the experience of the happiness, the sukha, the joy. And let your mind really, as much as you can, just absorb into that. When you're first learning it, there might be some wavering, you might fall out, see if you can get back in, etc. But the whole idea is now you've calmed things down somewhat and you're just totally focused on being happy. The happiness is, well, it's like it's your birthday. And somebody gives you a really nice present and you open it up and it's like, oh wow, I always wanted one of these, this is so nice. That kind of happiness, okay? Only it's not caused by anything external. It's generated just by your concentrated mind. We have this happiness within us all the time. When something makes you happy, it's not happiness coming from the outside into your head. The happiness is neural pathways in your brain that get lit up. Those pathways are always there. Unfortunately, we usually don't know how to light them up unless our team wins or we see our friend or whatever. Okay, some external thing. Learning the second jhana is learning how to tap into this always there potential, this naturally occurring happiness, and you get there simply by concentrating rather than needing an external stimulus. It can be quite interesting and liberating to find this much happiness within you. Again, we have a simile. Suppose there were a deep lake whose waters welled up from below, and it would have no inlet for water from the east, the west, the north, or the south, nor would it be filled from time to time with showers of rain. And yet a current of cool water welling up from within the lake would drench, steep, saturate, and suffuse the whole lake, so there would be no part of that entire lake which is not suffused with the cool water. In the same way, one drenches, steeps, saturates, and suffuses one's body with the rapture and happiness born of concentration, so there is no part of one's entire body which is not suffused by this rapture and happiness. Okay, so the picture is of a lake far up in the mountains, no streams coming in, no rain, but a spring at the bottom of the lake. And the spring water comes out of the spring and totally fills the lake, touching every part of the lake. This is an incredibly accurate picture of what the second jhana feels like. The first jhana seems to be happening more in the face area, maybe the throat, but really the upper part of the body. When you take that breath and let things drop down, it feels as though the location of the second jhana is more like in the heart center. And the happiness is welling up out of your heart. Your heart has now become a spring instead of water of happiness. And this simile really captures the feeling of the second jhana amazingly well. Once again, at first it may seem to be only in your torso or torso and head. When you get very skilled at it, you can move your attention into the other parts of your body and spread the PT and Sukha so that they are fully encompassing your body. But again, it's an advanced practice. Get the first jhana, stabilize it, move to the second, be able to stabilize it. That's the key thing. When you get really good at it, then you can spread it throughout your body. For the second jhana, it would be good to learn to stay in it for 10 to 15 minutes. Your time sense is quite distorted, of course, so you're just going to have to guess. But you want to be able to get there and stay there for an extended period of time. And when you can do that, further, with the fading away of rapture, one dwells in equanimity, mindful and clearly comprehending, and experiences happiness with the body. Thus one enters and remains in the third jhana, of which the noble ones declare, one dwells happily with equanimity and mindfulness. One drinks deep, saturates and suffuses one's body with this happiness free from rapture, so there is no part of one's entire body not suffused by this happiness. Okay, so for the third jhana, the piti, the rapture, fades away. And then one is equanimous, mindful, and clearly comprehending. The third jhana is a more peaceful state. It also says, one dwells happily with equanimity and mindfulness. So how would you describe a happy equanimity? Well, the actual experience of the third jhana is a state of contentment, a state of wishlessness, a state of deep satisfaction. Satisfaction so complete that if Mick Jagger had been practicing the third jhana, he couldn't sing that song, right? You're just satisfied, totally satisfied. So what you've done, basically, is transform the sukha of the second jhana, which shows up as joy or happiness, into sukha that feels like contentment or satisfaction. Again, to move from the second to the third, you can take a deep breath, let the energy out, and when you do, let the intensity level of the happiness begin to weaken. Right? Instead of having a nice big grin, now things come down to sort of a Buddha smile. And the feeling is one of contentment. Something that might help is, all right, you take the big deep breath and you let the happiness start to subside a bit. And then you remember a time when you were very contented. I don't know, you just eaten a very nice meal. You didn't overeat, and you don't have to wash the dishes, right? You're just like, ah. All right, so a quarter second memory, pluck the feeling of contentment out of that memory. So happiness starts to decrease. Quick memory, pull the feeling of contentment out of it, and now the happiness becomes the contentment. Focus on the emotional sense of contentment, of satisfaction. The PT should all be gone. If you get to contentment, but there's still some energy there, you didn't get to the third jhana. You just cut your contentment. You got your sukha calmed down. But the third jhana is a very still place. There's no sense of motion at all. There's just this very contented feeling, this state of wishlessness. Again, it says one drinks deep, saturates, and suffuses one's body with a happiness free from rapture, so there's no part of one's body not filled with happiness. As before, you want to find the state and then stabilize the state, and then it's an advanced practice to move it throughout your body. And again, it's the same thing. Get it stable and then move your attention into the areas where it doesn't feel like it's there, where the happiness isn't there, and the happiness will tend to follow. The second jhana, as I said, seems to be from the heart center. The third jhana seems to be further down, lower, maybe in the belly. In fact, the sense of going down when you go from 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 is so strong that when a student says to me, they were in the second jhana and they went down to the next one, I don't know whether they meant they went down in number and went back to 1, or down in feeling and went on to 3. It's a very much a sense of 1, 2, 3, 4 going down as you go into these jhanas. Again, we have a simile. Suppose in a lotus pond there were blue, white, or red lotuses that have been born in the water, grow in the water, and never rise up above the water, but flourish immersed in the water. From their tips to their roots, they would be drenched deep, saturated, and suffused with water. So there would be no part of those lotuses not suffused with water. In the same way, one drenches deep, saturates, and suffuses one's body with a happiness free from rapture. So there is no part of one's entire body which is not suffused by this happiness. So, the picture is of a lotus pond, and there are lotuses coming up out of the mud, but not above the surface of the water. They're leading their whole lives underwater and completely saturated with water. This is a very still picture. You don't have the lotuses waving in the breeze, and they're not bobbing up and down with the water. They're just there underwater. The third jhana, as I say, with the piti gone, is a very still place. There's no sense of motion at all. You're just contented. It's just, Like the second jhana, you want to learn to get there and then be able to sustain it for 10 to 15 minutes. Once you get good at it, you could try moving it through your body. And once you get good at it, then it's possible to move on to the fourth jhana. Further, with the abandoning of pleasure and pain, and with the previous passing away of joy and grief, one enters and remains in the fourth jhana, which is neither pleasant nor painful, and contains mindfulness fully purified by equanimity. One sits suffusing one's body with a pure, bright mind, so there is no part of one's entire body not suffused by a pure, bright mind. Okay, so in the third jhana, it's a pleasant state. You, as I said, have a little wispy Buddha smile. It's quite pleasant to be contented. To move to the fourth jhana, you need to let go of the pleasure. I find that I can put my attention on the smile and just relax all the muscles of my face. And when I do, there's a sense of things starting to sink down. Go with the feeling of sinking down. So however you can, let go of the pleasure of the contentment. And if there's a sense of sinking, put your attention on the sinking feeling and just go down with the sinking. Let it just drop down further and further. It says, with the abandoning of pleasure and pain. Now, there's no pain in the jhanas, right? But there's pleasure in the first three. And with the previous passing away of joy and grief, again, no grief in the jhanas, but there's joy in the first two. So when those have gone, then you can let your mind sink down to a place of quiet stillness. That's the best object I can give you to focus on. The fourth jhana is often called the jhana of equanimity. But if I tell you focus on equanimity, that's sort of like, exactly what is that? But if I tell you focus on quiet stillness, then you will wind up focused on the equanimity. It says that the fourth jhana is a place beyond pleasure and pain and contains mindfulness fully purified by equanimity. This is a very quiet, still place. no movement, no emotion. It's an emotionally neutral place. It's a very restful state. It might feel like you've fallen asleep when you come out of it, and you feel that sort of like you had a nap and you wake up and you're rejuvenated, except you know, I didn't fall asleep. It has that much of a restful quality to it. Most of the time we're thinking all day long, and then at night we're dreaming, or we're oblivious. Here's a chance to be fully alert and not really doing anything with your mind. That's a really good way to recharge. It says, one sits suffusing one's body with a pure, bright mind, so there is no part of one's entire body not suffused by a pure, bright mind. When I first was learning the fourth jhana, I was experiencing it as a dark place. It seemed to be really far down. Ayakema actually talked about in the third jhana, you're in the mouth of a well. You're a little bit isolated from the fourth jhana, from the world. To get to the fourth jhana, let go and drop down the well. It's not like a free fall. It's more like drifting down. Sort of like drifting to the bottom of the swimming pool or the bottom of the sea. Those images can be helpful as well. Or maybe you're in the mouth of a cave and then you go deep down into the mountain. That sense of sinking is quite dramatic. Now, don't try and climb down the well. All right, you gotta let go. I mentioned that entering the fourth jhana requires more letting go than any of the previous jhanas. And what you have to let go of is, well, anything you're hanging on to, right? Just let go of everything and let your mind sink down into this place of quiet stillness. Now, as I said, I found it dark. And, you know, in talking with Ayakema and describing, she was saying, yeah, that's the fourth jhana. So I never really understood. One sits suffusing one's entire body by a pure, bright mind. Well, my mind was pure, because there wasn't much going on, but I didn't get the bright part. There's a simile. Suppose a man were to be sitting covered from the head down by a white cloth, so there would be no part of his entire body not suffused by the white cloth. In the same way, one sits suffusing one's body with a pure, bright mind, so there is no part of one's entire body not suffused by a pure, bright mind. Okay, so it's a guy with a sheet over his head, right? And he's a bit secluded from the world. And yeah, in the fourth jhana, you feel a bit, you know, secluded from the world. But why is it a white sheet? And why the pure, bright mind? I practiced the jhanas for maybe 16 years before I finally figured it out. I was on a meditation retreat at the Forest Refuge in Massachusetts with the Venerable Pao Auk. The Venerable Pao Auk is a jhana master from southern Burma who teaches the jhanas as described in the Visuddhimagga, the commentarial jhanas, the very, very deep states. I had read his book. I had seen him for a day long in the San Francisco Bay Area where I was living at the time. And I had talked to three or four Westerners who had been to his monastery. And so I was prepared to go on a retreat for a month and not get anywhere near his jhanas. The consensus seemed to be if you wanted to learn his jhanas, you better have 6 months. That was sort of like a minimum. And I only had 1 month. But hey, go and find out, see what it's like. Venerable Pao Auk and the commentaries say that in order to enter the first jhana, you need what's called a nimitta. Now, the word nimitta appears in the suttas, and it means sign. Just plain old sign. If your stomach is growling, it's a sign you're hungry. And you would use the word nimitta if you were speaking Pali. The diffuse white light that you see, if you get really concentrated, that's a sign of good concentration. But by the time of the commentaries, the word nimitta had taken on a very specific meaning of a circle of light. So in order to enter the first jhana, you need to generate this circle of light. So I started practicing according to Venerable Pao Auk's instructions. And he gave the one about counting. Count the gap between the out-breath and the next in-breath. Put the number in between and count only to 8. And he said, when you can do that for 30 minutes without getting lost, let me know. Because we had interviews, you know, pretty much every day. And so it wasn't long before I could do that. I mean, I've done mindfulness of breathing for quite a while. And so I went to him and told him, yeah, I can do the 30 minutes without getting lost. And he said, okay. After 30 minutes, drop the counting, and then just keep following the breath for 3 or 4 hours. Okay. It was challenging, to say the least. I would sit in a chair in my room next to the bed, and after an hour and a half or 2 hours, my body would start complaining, and so I would ease over into the bed and lay there for now 15 or 20 minutes, still following my breath, and then back into the chair. And, you know, I could do 3 or 4 hours of meditation. It wasn't very long, though, before I started getting these incredibly strong bursts of piti. Having practiced mindfulness of breathing in order to get to piti for many years, wasn't surprising, but I was surprised by how intense the PT was. I wasn't doing anything to trigger it. I was just sitting there following my breath, but after an hour, I would get this really strong, violent shaking. I was a little worried my head was going to pop off. Luckily, it would only last about 15 or 20 seconds, and then it would fade out. So the next interview, I described what was happening to Venerable Pao Auk. I didn't use the word PT, I just described the symptoms. And he said to me, "That is gross PT. Do not let that happen." Okay. Well, since I was in the habit of smiling when I meditated so I could get to PT, I was like, okay, don't smile. And so I would meditate and keep a very solemn expression on my face. And I found, yeah, the PT wouldn't come back. And so I would work, you know, trying to get to the nimitta. After 3 weeks, I begin to get the preliminary nimitta. See, you first have to get the preliminary nimitta, and then you got to get the intermediate nimitta, and then maybe you'll get the real nimitta. Well, I was beginning to get the preliminary nimitta occasionally. But sometimes, after, say, doing what he told me for 4 hours, I'd smile. And the PT would come back really, really strong. And then after 15 or 20 seconds, it would fade away. And I would find myself in what was obviously the second jhana. I had a break-your-face grin. I mean, just, I couldn't stop smiling. It was just like, wow. And I would just sit there. It was like, I recognized it as the second jhana, but it was far more stable than I had ever experienced before. Maybe I'd stayed in access concentration as long as 15 minutes at some time before, but never 4 hours, because basically that's what was happening. And it produced a really stable second jhana. My mind was not going anywhere. It was sunk into being happy. In fact, it was so strong that, you know, after 10 minutes, it was like, hey, let's see what the third jhana's like. Couldn't get to the third jhana. Because you see, the PT would come back every now and then. I'm sitting there, I got this big smile on my face, and I'm really happy, and then here comes the PT again, and then it would fade out. And I'm there with the smile, and here it comes again. It took, I don't know, 20 minutes, and finally the PT faded away, didn't come back anymore. And without me doing anything, the happiness just sort of faded down to contentment. And there I was in the third jhana. I was like, oh, cool. So I stayed there for a while. I was like, let's see what the fourth jhana is like. Couldn't get there. I just couldn't stop with the little smile. No more piti coming, but, you know, I'm like stuck in contentment. Not a bad place to be stuck. But eventually, without me doing anything, the contentment just faded away, and it felt like I went over the edge of a cliff, and things went down, 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 and they settled in a place of very quiet stillness. Only this time it wasn't dark. It was bright white. It was just like I was sitting in an open field on a sunny day with a white sheet over my head and my eyes open. Oh, this is the simile, and this is what is meant by the pure, bright mind. Obviously, the Buddha and his disciples were practicing the fourth jhana at a deeper level of concentration than I had been practicing before this experience. I was able to get back there several times, you know, just really do access concentration for 4 hours, trying to get that nimitta, and then smile and go through the second, third, fourth jhana. It was quite interesting. And so finally I understood what was being talked about here. So on a course like this, you're probably not going to be able to generate the depth of concentration to get the pure, bright mind with the white field. Okay, unless you're willing to sit for 4 hours. I suggest being good at the jhanas before you attempt to do something like that. But you will get a taste of what these jhanic states are like, and if you're on some longer retreat and want to take them deeper, it's just a matter of cranking up the access concentration for a longer period of time. So, after you've been in the jhanas, then what? Well, many times what we find is when one's mind is thus concentrated, pure and bright, unblemished, free from defects, malleable, wieldy, steady, and attained to imperturbability, one directs and inclines it to knowing and seeing. One understands thus, this is my body, having material form, composed of the four primary elements, originating from mother and father, built up out of rice and gruel, impermanent, subject to rubbing and pressing, to dissolution and dispersion. And this is my consciousness, supported by it and bound up with it. The purpose of the jhanas is to generate a mind that is concentrated, pure and bright, unblemished, free from defects, malleable, wieldy, steady, and attained to imperturbability, which you can then direct and incline to knowing and seeing. Knowing and seeing what? This body and this mind. The four foundations of mindfulness. First foundation, body. And the second, third, and fourth foundations, mind. The jhanas are a warm-up exercise for insight practice. They will turbocharge your insight practice. Whether you're doing one of the practices given in the Satipatthana Sutta, or open awareness, or standard Vipassana, whatever that means to you, or any other practice, Shikantaza, Dzogchen, any practice that you do with a very concentrated mind, I can pretty much guarantee you will give you more insights and deeper insights. Getting enlightened is a difficult job. It's not very easy. You got this table here, right? It's wood. Yeah? Suppose I were to go out there and get a dull butter knife and want to cut this table in two with the dull butter knife. I could do it, It's going to take a long time, though, right? I mean, I can make one little dent, right, to start with. But to cut it in two with a dull knife, that's a lot of work. It's going to go much faster if I get a whetstone and put an edge on that knife, right? And then I start cutting, and it's going to go much easier. This is what the jhanas are like. They're not cutting through the table. They're just putting the edge on your mind. But when you start cutting with a sharp knife, you make up all the time you wasted with the sharpening, right? It's actually quite useful to spend some time sharpening before you start cutting. It's the same thing with concentration. The concentration is not going to give you the deep insights necessary to really make the breakthroughs that are possible on the spiritual path. But they will prepare your mind so that whatever insight practice you do with your very concentrated mind is much more efficient. In the Tibetan tradition, the bodhisattva of wisdom is Manjushri. And he's usually depicted holding a sword, which he uses to cut the bonds of ignorance. Jhana practice is simply sharpening Manjushri's sword. Right? You still got to go wield the sword to cut the bonds of ignorance. And if you sit there just sharpening, never go wield the sword, just sharpen. Well, someday you don't have any sword, you sharpen it into oblivion. Right? Once it's sharp, go out and do some insight practice and cut through the bonds of ignorance. So this is the four jhanas, and this is what they're used for. To produce a mind that is going to make your insight practice go much better. Thank you.